Yeah, as you can see, we may have a brand problem within our profession, but about public health, but we'll get there. I want to start off by saying no relationship to disclose, but I guess I should mention I'm employed by New York Chiropractic College. I want to give a special thanks here to Alex Reinhardt, who is the club president and has kind of taken on a pretty big role in starting this up in the beginning. Okay, I met with President Nietzsche in 2007 actually to talk with him about enrolling all the students in the college in the APHA. And he suggested at the time that we just start with beginning a public health club, which I thought was a great idea. I hadn't considered it. And I had to put together the paperwork to do it, and I creatively titled it the Public Health Club. As I'll, as well, I'll get talked to later. I probably should have thought a little harder about that. In the purpose statement to get the club approved, I had to write out what the club would be about, and I expressed some things that were pretty important to me. First, that public health principles are broadly accepted. Second, that I wanted to help students have a, understand a full spectrum of the word wellness, and I referred to primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention. And also the importance of prevention, promotion, and protection as separate concepts. And last, hopefully that members of the club would be leaders on campus, in the community, and in the future. We got it approved, and the big question was how to launch it. I actually don't work on campus, and I needed a way to start the club up. Well, the stars aligned for me. Right about the same time, I got asked by the Career Development Center to give a lecture to the campus on how public health could work with a future chiropractic career so that students would be aware of that. I thought, oh, perfect chance to launch the club. So I gave this lecture. This is the title slide, Public Health, the Next Step in Integrative Chiropractic. And, you know, I like to think that this was a lecture that started a revolution, but we'll have to see still. You know, history will tell. But I did throw down the gauntlet. I took a couple of really challenging issues and presented them to the students. First, I talked about chiropractic's credibility problem. I asked them, did they perceive that we had one? And I challenged them that we did. And we talked through it, and that was really interesting. Talked about the very abused word wellness, which I have issues with myself, but and these I showed them, asked them a couple of questions with regards to the term. I'll show you a few of the slides. Does wellness mean selling supplements? We talked about passive income and how that word is often wellness is a euphemism often. And we talked about is wellness only for those who can pay for it? Is wellness only for those who are already healthy? If you look at the advertising and chiropractic trade papers and so forth related to wellness, you're usually going to see very healthy, very white, very wealthy people, you know, smelling herbs and doing yoga. And, you know, is wellness also for people who are not well off and who are not already healthy? Talked again about wellness and public health language. I talked about how to get involved through the American Public Health Association and through this club, but we wanted to start. And I want to tell you a little bit what I told them about the club, because this is how the students came into it, and then I'll talk about what we've done. I told them it is not a means of promoting chiropractic. Talked about leadership and teamwork and working in integrated settings and service. I had told them that the indirect benefits of chiropractic participation in public health is the improvement of how we are perceived, the improvement of how we perceive that we need to change, and also that we end up, by doing it correctly, having continued opportunities to get involved. I told them that all those indirect benefits I just listed cannot be achieved if we go out looking for us, looking out for what's best for us. And this was the concept. The door to integrative participation as equals has to be opened from the inside and not beat down. And public health is the universal currency opening the doors to broader participation. Well, what happened, really, I was thrilled by, because I had a large group of students that came up afterwards and had real concerns about chiropractic, about social justice, about how to get involved. It was thrilling. It was great. And even some students who right away offered to get involved as leaders. So we began. It's been a year now, and what I'd like to share with you is the challenges, successes, and lessons learned, or how I learned to stop worrying and love the Public Health Club. Okay. First, the challenges. And what I'm going to share with you now is kind of from the students' feedback. For club leadership, a challenge is that it's a new leadership experience. For those who agree to be leaders, they probably actually haven't ever led anything before. They're having to learn the job kind of on the fly while running through a graduate level program, and it's a real challenge for them. They're also starting from scratch. If those of you who decide to start such a club up, they don't have already existing programs they can jump in and continue. There's no templates for how to do things. That has been a real challenge. And similarly, it's horizontal leadership. We're asking them to lead their peers, which is one of the most difficult types of leadership. And the comment was that students are so used to being talked to be asked to work in a horizontal way is a challenge. Also, communication saturation. We all know that there's so many ways that people are getting communicated through telephones and cell phones and internet mail and everything. To get a message through from club leadership to the club has been a real challenge. He said we have to email many, many, many times just to get through. Interestingly, the club president did not use the official NYCC mechanism to communicate with students. He used Facebook. That's a generational difference of maybe 10 years of me in the club. I've never been on Facebook, you know, and I don't really have an interest to, but they run everything on the club through Facebook, and it has worked pretty well. Related to that is a lack of feedback. The club leadership wanted to do things that the club members cared about, and when they would ask them, they wouldn't get any answers. So it's a challenge. NYCC is not unique in that it's based in trimesters. The student body is essentially fractured into 10 groups, and to try to get all the groups equally involved is a challenge. The student leadership perceives that the groups on campus, the student support groups administratively, they're supposed to support them, do not appreciate the challenges they face as volunteer student leaders. Challenges for student members. If it is a project they've agreed to volunteer for, meets up against study for a midterm or final, volunteering loses. Also, the comment that the same 15 people run every club and are really the very committed people, they're overextended. For potentially interested students, this is one I hadn't even thought of, but I had in other settings. The comment was that students in undergrad maybe would have engaged in things to help their resume get filled up, to help them get scholarships, to help them get better future jobs. That in our profession there is an absolute lack of external incentives to particularly excel. The valedictorian has no particularly greater chance of getting a really neat job and opportunity than the person who comes in last in the class. There's no reason externally, external motivators to be involved. This one, the trifecta. Who was I talking about trifecta the other day? Anyway, the students, apparently there's this thought that you only need three things to succeed in practice: some business skills, communication skills, and the ability to manipulate, and voila, you're going to be successful. And because that's the view, there's not necessarily a perception that public health has anything to offer future success. The branding problem. When we said public health club, people didn't want to join because they thought of the public health class and they thought that they were somehow related or covered the same territory. It was a real negative. So we're going to have to work on that. It's a brand problem in our whole profession. We all fight it when we try to get people to join APHA or get involved in public health activities. You know, House of Delegates recommends everyone join APHA and our membership shrinks. So there you go. For the faculty advisor, myself, I have huge ideas for what I want to see this club accomplish, and time is obviously a challenge. Also, different stakeholders. When we were trying to arrange going out and speaking in the community, the NYCC admin has an interest in that. The clinics who are starting a business of getting out and talking to businesses in the community has an interest. Student life has an interest, so that has to be coordinated. But we've had successes. This is a list of some of the projects. I'll let you read through them. We had the Nation's Health, which covered our National Public Health Week activity. We got our club president who wrote a neat article about his hopes for the club and dynamic chiropractic, the Relay for Life, some neat things. Also, they run by committee, so students who have a particular interest, whether it's in beating risky sexual behaviors, beating smoking, student steroid use, their communication, community service, they actually get other interested students and they run those independently, those committees, which I think is fantastic. So really, it's developed student leadership, which is, I think, a beautiful thing. This is an example from the Nation's Health. We got information from all the chiropractic colleges we could that had done things for National Public Health Week, and the club's activities there were listed. And this is just a quote from his Dynamic Chiropractic article about the vision of the club to empower and mobilize students to become chiropractors who will lead in their communities. I thought that was great. So what have we learned? It's really hard to get commitment and follow through from time-strapped volunteers, but if you don't be very vigilant about accountability, it won't happen. What's in a name? Public Health Club doesn't work until we change the perception of public health. And so the suggestions were things like public health and leadership, or something. We have to figure that out and also continue to work on the image problem. Club leaders who are volunteers and who are students and have a lot on their plate, they need support from admin or from faculty, but I feel very strongly that it has to remain their club and tackle issues they care about. I can't tell them we need to go work on smoking if their concern is steroid use, but if their concern is steroid use with their limited time and they'll go pursue that, I think it's fantastic. It just so happens they have multiple interests and those committees can go out and engage, and I'm very supportive of that. We talked about that trifecta. They thought communication skills and business skills and manipulation skills were all you needed to be a successful chiropractor, which I think is very unfortunate reductionism. But the public speaking part is a transferable skill. It's very important. Public health, we do education all the time, and if they can learn to be effective communicators, that will convey or carry over into their practice. And what the club has actually started doing is having, when the group gets together, they'll have about 100 challenging questions, and they get a minute, randomly pick one, and answer it to the group. And that's just one thing that's developed some interest, but is useful. Last lesson, I think this is my last lesson on here, small victories. We had a really big vision for the club and still do, but you saw the list of successes like organizing Relay for Life or doing some other things. They're small victories, they're small steps, and it can members who are in the club can still be engaged in useful activities while we try to build up towards the larger things that we'd like to be involved in. And the future. We hope you'll start one. We obviously have a brand problem. If we can on every campus get a public health club that is not rah-rah chiropractic, but is genuinely a service-oriented, public health-oriented group, that the vision can catch on, that it's worthwhile, and that it's interesting work, and it makes a difference. And it actually improves health in communities. We'd like to see our own club continue to be a real, actual force, making a difference for health promotion and disease prevention on campus and in our community. The club is committed to becoming involved in the APHA Student Assembly, which I, again, totally support. I'm really happy with these students in this club. They're great. And also a desire to consume and produce research as a club. The club is hoping to begin to pursue IRB approval and pursue projects either by a semester or by a year or whatever time frame. And last, as we continue to talk about, to see APHA enrollment become something automatic on our campus. So thank you very much.
All right, some questions for Jonathan. No questions? Many questions.
Okay, so I'm a student from LACC. I'm also a dual student for the acupuncture college as well. So I agree with you with what you had said as far as the level of commitment, because the way it is in our school too, those are also the dual program, and in 15 other clubs, they're just like, they're everywhere, we're spread so thin, and it's just, it's a big problem. So I would like your opinion as far as how we can combat horizontal leadership, as you had said, and because it is hard to lead our peers. So how would we do that?
That's one of the biggest challenges. I think that's where the committee addresses both of your issues, because of time commitment. No student can be involved in everything the club might want to do. So first, pick something you're interested in and only work on that. And then I think if you get together at the committee level and everybody is similarly interested, it helps address that horizontal leadership problem. You may still need to pick someone to spearhead it, maybe that committee leader is most interested, but at least you have a small group similarly interested people, but that is a challenge. If anyone else has thoughts about that, welcome. Yeah.
In our school, we have certain clubs, like you mentioned, Toastmaster. We actually got rid of Toastmaster so we could, because, yeah, it helps us with public speaking, but our students wanted to know how to do more chiro talks, because a lot of our incoming students don't know how to communicate what chiropractic. So in place of Toastmasters, we now have a team chiropractic who are set to go out to the communities and educate people about who we are and what we do. We also have another club that's H3, and it stands for Healing Hands for Humanity, and they're more community service-based work. So I'm kind of thinking this club would be kind of in between a team chiropractic and Healing Hands for Humanity. So I'm wondering how we can incorporate that for our school at LACC.
Yeah, the one thing I've tried to share with the students is when they go out to speak in the community that they are not actively promoting chiropractic. That they can be viewed as a useful expert that can convey information that really makes a difference. You know, that will reflect well on them and on their profession. But they don't need to come right up and actively, I feel by actively trying to promote chiropractic, you're actually doing a disservice to yourself and to the profession. But that's just how I feel. I'd rather be seen as a useful team member.
Dr. Johnson.
Question about, it's wonderful what you're doing, getting the students excited. Sometimes students end up, I know you're talking about horizontal, but sometimes they end up leading the rest of the community, the faculty and the staff, et cetera. Have you thought about possibly making a larger community? Maybe there'd be a faculty club with public health or staff. For example, there's a company that I'm familiar with that actually does health promotion within for its staff members, and they've noticed that the cost of health, providing health care for their employees has gone down because they emphasize exercising at lunch, providing better food on that campus. There might be something even broader, maybe that could come out from the students, or what are your thoughts about bringing in the larger community?
No, I think that's a great idea. As far as our campus goes, there's a kind of a staff and faculty wellness group that does operate. On our campus, clubs are considered clubs that operate under the auspices of student life. They're not autonomous in any way, but they could still link up with other groups that are operating. We actually think when we're preparing to speak out in the community, we'd like to have them practice first by speaking to the wellness group and kind of get feedback before they go out and really, do it live. So that was a great idea.
Is there a thing where faculty have their own clubs? I know you said students, but with the subject of role models earlier, if more and more students see their own faculty participating in this and getting out there and really motivated, some students will follow and actually join, as opposed to it's just an idea, as opposed to just students making this and doing all of this, faculty really getting involved and students following.
I agree with you on that one. I know they need to see us doing it. In my case, I'm on the Board of Health. A friend of mine is on the Board of the Red Cross. Dr. Doherty's on campus. He's been using for a decade. They see and hear about the experiences that we're having. There isn't the club, but they should still see us doing the types of things that we're encouraging them to do. I agree with you.
Is there a thing as faculty club?
There are like this wellness type of committee or wellness club. There are things like that are on campus. Yeah. It's not as publicized to students, but maybe it should be.
Another question.
Just to add on to her comment, at the outpatient clinics, there are some docs, meeting one of them, that will bring interns in when they do a health promotion so they can see how it's done.
Good.
Went to the sixth grade health class and did Straight Up America right with the class. I did it with them. So, it seems to be more of them, though. It's just a handful of people. Go to the Rotary Club, go to Toastmasters. Mm-hmm. I brought interns to Toastmasters. Talked about chiropractic.
Yeah, but that's great. That's fantastic.
So it does happen, but it needs to be a lot.
Other questions from the group? I have two observations that will be followed by a question to our panel at large. The first is, in the work that I've had the privilege to participate in past years relating to student perceptions, and in listening to the work that was presented here today, I think I would observe that we're chronically surprised at the distance between our expectations for student responses and their honest reactions to our questions. And a second observation is that I am also shocked and in some ways dismayed at how our faculty's opinions demonstrate in many instances a lack of depth, and at the very least a substantial divergence from what we would consider to be best practices in these fields. And I would like to ask our panel to respond to the query of whether we're asking the wrong group right now. Maybe we should be focusing our interests and efforts on a culture change within faculty first.
first comment is that at least four chiropractic institutions have R25 grants, which are designed to do specifically that. You know, they are in fact cultural motivators in that they're designed to provide faculty with certain skills that they can then apply in classroom settings and thereby influence students across the curriculum, both horizontally and vertically. So I think, you know, number one, that's well recognized and it's already happening. You know, I think the other part of it is that the cultural change is, you know, it's like pushing an iceberg. You know, it takes time and energy. And my own perception is that, you know, I think that our best hope is sort of down the road as older established faculty with biases retire and are replaced with younger faculty that have, you know, been bigger and, you know, more open attitudes about things.
I agree. I think that the problem is that some of the, I don't know how to say this politically correct, but
the microphone's off here.
The problem is some of the people we attract by the very nature of what we do, it seems to perpetuate this. I mean, Lou Sportelli said what we need in this profession is a few more funerals, and I won't go that far. My grandfather wouldn't use an x-ray machine. He was a chiropractor, but he didn't need one. He didn't think. But I don't know how you go about controlling that replacement of those faculty members who retire with those who think like probably most of the people in this room, because it seems to me that that has been a difficult task at the two institutions that I've been employed. So I agree with you.
Well, I really need to watch everybody die out, but I think but I think the point is that, no, I think the reality is that if we talk to our clinicians in some way or make them realize that they are doing some of these things, it's just that they probably don't recognize that they are involved in some of these health promotion aspects, and also to try to encourage them to become, you know, more involved. And I think now with the CCE mandate that is going to happen, because now there are the competencies that we have to prove that our students actually have these competencies. You know, it hasn't hit our clinic yet because it started in 2007 February, but the point is that there's going to be, you know, things that we need to go into the clinic and actually prove to CCE that, hey, we have met these competencies. And, you know, and that's something that depends on our accreditation. So I do think that, number one, our clinicians have to understand that this truly is coming. This is truly a CCE mandate, and our accreditation depends on it. And also, but to make it, you know, more fun than just the hammer coming down, it's just that, you know, you've been doing this. Just realize that you've been doing this.
And I would take partly the opposite side of that tack, even though I would agree with what you're saying, is that I don't feel like faculty really do understand public health. The term wellness is used, and as I said, abused, and what people mean by that and think they're referring to public health, they often are not, right? There's a real disconnect. You know, public health would be, let's take immunizations, it would be support for immunization, support for fluoridation, things that you might get some real violent opposition from, and those would be just two examples. But I think often it's a very poorly understood concept. You know, if I tell somebody feel like I'm getting a little sick, and they tell me, well, have you been adjusted yet? You know, I think their view and my view of what spinal manipulation does, let alone what chiropractors do, let alone what public health is and what wellness are and mean, might not even be on the same book or whatever, same plan.
Yeah.
Just a comment. I loved when you were presenting and you mentioned our brochures and the typical white, wealthy, smelling the herbs. And I wonder if framing it under a social justice, like a social justice club, and because I think especially in, if anybody went to the opening remarks for this conference, really there's a shift in public health to talk about social determinants. And I think that can sometimes clarify the difference between wellness care and public health if it's taking that framework.
Yeah, that's true.
Comment.
Well, to echo the panel, to correlate with the name of this conference, Borders Without Borders. In our colleges, there are borders that are still existent with faculty members that have an archaic thinking of the way we should practice who we are, our identity. And the problem is we need to strip down those borders in our institutions so that we're congruent at all the institutions. And I think that's the initial start. And then hopefully that's going to change the ideologies of faculty members and hopefully hire more evidence-based faculty members, then it's going to be an easier transition.
Well, I would like to observe that, you know, Dana mentioned the R25 grants that are out there for faculty development and training. At our institution, we have one of those grants, and it's a very impactful process. But it is no less painful and no less arduous to bring faculty through these processes. And really, I think that the observation that's being made here on the panel is that there really is a need for a cultural change, and that cultural change really needs to permeate all aspects of the institution. And I dare say that the far-reaching benefits and impact of an R25 grant will fall far short of a true cultural change. You know, the classic historic public health mantra has been, you go into a community and you provide a great deal of resources and energy and time, and then when the grant money runs out, you disappear and the community goes right back to where they were the Monday after you leave. And I really do wonder what will happen when this particular source of funding, you know, packs up its bags and moves back to Washington.
Apply for the continuation.
Correct. Yeah.
And the problem is deeper than that. I was going to sort of pick on Mike for just a minute, because it's not just faculty, of course. You know, you could throw out the entire faculty and bring an entirely new set of faculty, and you're still dealing with students that are coming from families that have long histories within the profession, and come in with fixed beliefs at the time they walk in the door, you know, and so there's an answer for everything,
right.
You know, that they have.
Philosophy classes, we don't go back to 110 years and educate them, spew that, and somehow use that as the underlying foundation, because we have evolved as a profession. So hopefully, you're right, you're not going to change everybody, but hopefully you can make that cultural shift.
So we have Jonathan, and then we have two comments.
This comment was pertinent to an earlier one, but you know, on the Board of Health, one of my personal interests is in fluoridation. We're trying to talk about how to begin to do it in my community. Something like 10% to 30% of kids in my state have untreated cavities, for example, which fluoridation can prevent. And my concern is that my employer, you know, that there's faculty there that will fight me on it. And in this community, we allowed opposition. And I'm going to say it breaks my heart, the strong language, but to think that I may have to battle not only anti-fluoridation forces in the community, but among other healthcare providers that I work with.
Of course, this is only my perception and my experience of being a national grad, but it's just interesting because at National, majority of students are not generational chiropractors, or chiropractic physicians. This, like, maybe 5% just keeps dwindling. It's an interesting phenomenon, I think. And we also don't really have philosophy. I mean, we have one class, and so we're not necessarily dealing with some of those issues of, like, what you were describing, or what you were saying, family history of philosophy, for example. What I do see, the observation I made, is that all schools are teaching public health, usually in combination with microbiology, for some reason, I don't understand. I think primarily it is because the school is teaching to the board, which I think you described as not being a good idea. But what I don't see, at least happening at National, is that we are sort of preaching this as a profession, this concept of wellness, in quotes, I don't know what that means, but we're not necessarily giving the physicians the tools to provide interventions for their patients. And I think that maybe that needs to come into education later on in the curriculum, wherever that may be. That's something that I am interested in doing, but that's what I think that we need.
Question. I'm also obviously a national grad.
Wait, whoa. You get the questions. You don't ask the questions here.
So Rachel, the question I have is, do you perceive that there's a difference in a national and a graduate from National compared to a graduate from some other college?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think we're all...
Even, even though the whole philosophy differs at national levels. The reason I ask this is because I recall before I left, there were some surveys that were done by Emory Giles, who was sort of the special advisor to the president at the time, looking at practice characteristics between national grads and graduates from life, and finding that 5 years after graduation, you couldn't tell them apart.
I agree. And I think that maybe the survey of students when they initially come in, those types of things that you're being faced with are different. And because of that, philosophically, each school needs to address their student population differently. But at the end of the day, we're all graduating as chiropractic physicians, and we need to make sure that we have the tools to play a stronger role in public health and play a stronger role in wellness and prevention with our patient base, which is essentially the community as a whole. So that's just kind of where I'm coming from.
We have time for one more comment.
Just a brief comment. You mentioned earlier about the funding running out, and for sustainability, I thought that was a great thing about your program as far as being student-driven and that not just coming with your pet projects, but coming from the student body, what they wanted to work on, and then supporting them. And I think there's a shift in public health to be more community participatory, so what that program is also.
I just hope it keeps working.
Well, I would like to thank you, the audience, for your active participation in this session. That always is the key to a good session. And I'd also like to thank our presenters today for fantastic presentations that were very provocative. So thank you.